Packers fans, welcome to this edition of the Green 19 podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined by my colleague, PackersNews.com reporter Ryan Wood. We are here on the cusp of the NFL Combine. That's kind of the unofficial kickoff of the NFL offseason, because we know things like the draft, the free agency period, all those things are to follow. So we'll look back a little bit and then get excited looking forward. We've got a new defensive coordinator that we can discuss. We may get into that a little bit as well. Ryan just did an entire series on grades. One of the more popular things I think we do anywhere on our web space over the course of the year is looking back at the season and handing out grades. That's exactly what he did. He looked at position group by position group. If you have not seen that, you should check that out, PackersNews.com. I love how Ryan sort of put it together. You get each individual grade, but then also one great thing for each position group, and then one thing that's maybe negative or thing to look forward to. Very easy to sort of scroll through if you want. So Ryan, we'll talk about individual grades. We'll talk about the individual players a little bit. I want to start, though, kind of zooming in on one group in particular, and that's only because there's a bigger issue to discuss, and that's linebackers. Because this switch to the 4-3 is something that I know is fascinating a lot of people. New defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley is going to be heading in that direction. It is, I would say, very confusing to me. I have a hard time explaining to people how that changes things for a team like the Packers, if it changes anything. It maybe doesn't change anything, but obviously we're heading into a player evaluation part of the offseason when it comes to free agency, the draft, and it's interesting to know if they will be looking at different players because the scheme is a little bit different. So I guess just, we'll start there, blank check. Give me a sense of what you feel the 4-3 change does to what the Packers are going to be doing this offseason and how they might look when they finally get on the field next year.
Yeah, I mean, you said it, linebacker. When you look at the 4-3 as a whole and what it does to this defense schematically, the changes from a 3-4 when they are in base, it doesn't affect any position group on defense as much as it affects linebacker. You start with defensive line, they don't have to really – do anything to the defensive line. It was a really strong group last season. I'm very curious how TJ Slayton, who's kind of that prototypical 3-4, is going to transition into more of a 4-3 system, where all of a sudden you've got multiple gaps, you got one gap, you got to shoot it, whereas in the 3-4 you can kind of take up both gaps and just be a road grader that TJ Slayton is. But the defensive line is good to go. It's not much of a change for the outside linebackers to defensive ends, because the Packers have big outside linebackers. Matt LaFleur during the season, you remember he said, it always makes me scratch my head when people say, you only got two down linemen when we're in nickel, because we got big outside linebackers, and he's right. So it's a minimal transition there. Linebacker is where it gets very different. You got completely different roles from a 3-4, where you got two inside linebackers and they're both kind of a Mike, to your 4-3, where each of those three, from your Sam, your Mike, your Will, is all a different position. And when you look at this roster, it's pretty easy to see Quay Walker. He's got good size. I don't think he's big enough to be the Sam. The strong side linebacker lines up over the tight end and takes a pounding against left tackles every game, left, right tackle. It just takes a pounding. That's your job. You got to be big and sturdy. He is a big linebacker, but you look at the Will position, the weak side, where someone with his kind of athleticism can just play in space, a lot more pass rushing opportunities off that weak side. That seems like a fit like a glove. Isaiah McDuffie, who played for Jeff Hafley already at Boston College, so Jeff Hafley comes in knowing him well. He's a little undersized to be your Mike. He's only 6'1", about 220, but everything about his film is classic Mike. I mean, he's that in-the-box tackler, doesn't have the sideline-to-sideline range, but is as solid of a tackler as the Packers had at linebacker this past season, at least until, you know, They can go out and get a Mike if they feel like they need to upgrade there. But I think that they can be okay with Isaiah McDuffie as a Mike linebacker for this season. The strong side linebacker is where I think they got to draft them. I don't see who on this roster fits the prototypical requirements needed for that position.
And for those who don't know, Sam, Mike, and Will, it's pretty simple, I think. Sam for S, strong side, Will W, weak side, Mike, middle, in the middle. So they have different responsibilities. The strong side guy needs to be the stronger, he's facing the tougher blocking. So that's sort of how that operation works. I'm really curious about Quay Walker specifically. You gave him a really good grade, and I think he's a – I don't know, controversial is probably too strong, but some days I thought he was having a major impact on the game, and some days I don't know if I saw that at all. And with this transition, like, it's possible that he's kind of the key to the whole thing based on our previous conversations. That's kind of my understanding. What does this all mean for Quay Walker? Is this being built around Quay Walker as a way to sort of heighten his strengths, or how would you put that with him?
Well, first of all, thank you for getting it right and saying that a B-, which is what I gave Quay Walker, is a really good grade.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, in school, like, yeah, this educational system, you're always shooting for A's, right? If you don't get an A, it's some sort of failure. That's not the way this grading system works. A C is an average NFL player. If you're an average NFL player, that's not a bad thing. Most of the league is comprised of average NFL players. There's not stars flooding every roster. You're most of the league's a C. A B minus for Quay Walker, that's a really solid grade. I mean, he's on the cusp of becoming a star, which I think is where Quay Walker is. You look at him last season, when it comes to, you know, again, that 3-4 inside linebacker where you're kind of like a Mike, you're a middle linebacker, you kind of got to do everything, pass coverage, run defense at the top of the list. He's only adequate when it comes to and adequate's not bad. He is adequate, but he's only adequate when it comes to the coverage aspects of the game, when it comes to the just being a run defender in the box. That he's middle of the road. Where he's really dynamic and where I think Jeff Hafley, the first thing that he does when he sits down, watches the film of the new personnel that he's inheriting, the first priority is crafting a defense to get the most out of Quay Walker as a pass rusher. Because physically, the tools he's built, his body, his speed, he's almost identical in measurements to Micah Parsons. There's very little difference. In fact, he's a little taller. He's a little longer. You know, some areas where he has an edge to Micah Parsons. I'm not saying that he is Micah Parsons because no, Micah Parsons is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. We haven't seen that from Quay Walker, but I think a big reason we haven't seen that is that that's not what he was predominantly asked to do under Joe Barry. And that's that, you want to maximize the talent that you have. Not having Quay Walker, a big part of his game being pass rush, is not maximizing Quay Walker. So if you're Jeff Hafley, how can you make this guy a problem at the line of scrimmage, getting after the quarterback, maximizing those tools that he has? That's got to be priority one. And again, I think that you put him on the weak side where you have more space, where you have easier access to the quarterback. That is a really good fit to be able to do that, because if you're just having him defend the run and drop in coverage a lot, that's not what he does best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going back to discussing how these grades are handed out, because inevitably you're going to get pushback no matter how you grade. You could give them all A's and people would be really upset that you're being too nice. You could give them all F's and you'd get obviously the reverse. So again, your sort of the way you look at it is, if you're a C player, you're an average NFL player, which is still quality. You've got to have a ton of average NFL players to fill out a good roster for a good team. So it's not an indictment to see a player C or C minus. You only handed out one A, and I think even that was an A minus. So which I found interesting. There is one other guy I thought should have been an A, but we can discuss that in a second. So I know that's how it's always been. Do you like to be an A player? Do you have to be a Pro Bowler? Do you have to be top 10, or I should say top 5 at your position in the league? Like what standards are you using to say this guy is truly cream of the crop and therefore an A player in your grades?
Not every Pro Bowler is an A player. Basically every All-Pro is an A player. That's sure. The top of the line. Tyreek Hill, Christian McCaffrey, they are A players in this league. They are the cream of the crop. And if you're not that, you're not an A. You can't be an A. I know for the receiver grades, I got a lot of pushback.
Yeah, you talked about this off camera a little earlier.
Like, how dare I give Jaden Reed a B grade, only a B, when he broke Sterling Sharpe's rookie record for the Packers for catches? Look, a B grade means that he is he's a star in this league. He is on the cusp of maybe becoming a superstar. We'll see. But he's not a superstar yet. He's not Tyreek Hill yet. And even more, I think to give Jaden Reed an A, you're saying this is the top notch that he has. There's nothing more here. And I don't think that we saw the best that Jaden Reed's going to be in his rookie season. I think there's another level that he can and will get to. And if he does do that, then he's an A player. But he's not an A player when he's the second, third best slot receiver in the NFC. I mean, you've got to be top level to receive an A. There's nothing wrong with the B.
This is a really difficult undertaking because you have to look at each position group. It's just got to be a ton of work. The one A you handed out is Kenny Clark, who you know is one of their best players. There's no secret. I think that again that was an A minus. And the one guy I thought could have been an A is Zach Tom, their right tackle, and he still got a really good grade. He had a really good year, and no one would dispute that. But I'm curious. I want to talk about those guys. Like, okay, so what was it that made Kenny Clark so elite that he does get into the A tier? And maybe what were the things that just kept Zach Tom just a little bit out?
Yeah, we talk about Kenny Clark, first of all. We're talking about a guy who gives you everything that you want from his position. Now, it's not Kenny Clark's fault that his position is not a premium position in this league. I mean, he's not an edge rusher. If you had his production, if you had his talent, at the edge rusher position, his production would be higher, and he'd be impacting games in a way that edge rushers do in this league. But you grade him at his position. And one of the great things for Kenny Clark this season was there's in his entire career, there's never been this much talent around him. There's never been this much depth, and he said it during the season. I mean, it's the best defensive line he's ever played on. And with that came a flexibility to not just line him up at nose. For one, T.J. Slayton was a hell of a nose. So you can put T.J. Slayton in the middle. He did the dirty work, the things that don't show up in the stat sheets, and he did them at a high level. I think I had 17 run stuffs for T.J. Slayton. That doesn't show up in the box score. But one of the big things it allows you to do is move Kenny Clark to the three tech defensive tackle, where I thought this was as fine, if not the best season that Kenny Clark has had in his career, partly because he's still young, he's still in his prime, and partly because the talent that is around him that allowed him to have the flexibility to move up and down the line of scrimmage. And from a pass rushing standpoint, plays the run at an exceptionally high level. Everything you want from a three-tech defensive tackle, a guy, a flexibility, all those things are there with Kenny Clark on film. That's why I gave him an A minus. There's another level for him to go. He's not a double digit sack interior defensive lineman, but that's the only thing that's missing, and he wasn't far off from that. As far as Zach Tom, I think I had him at 3.5 sacks. There was just, and that's not bad, but there was just enough from Zach Tom. You know, when he went up against a T.J. Watt in Pittsburgh, he allowed a sack. Aiden Hutchinson got him a sack. So when he lost, it was the top edge rushers in the league that got him. But if the top those are A players, right? Aiden Hutchinson and T.J. Watt are A players. If A players are the ones that are beating you, I have a hard time putting you on that A level yet.
Okay, a couple guys that got Fs that I want to talk about, too, on the other end of that spectrum. I wasn't keeping track of that. So there's only two that I know of for sure that I want to talk about, but there might be others that I missed. A lot of guys get incompletes because there just isn't enough data on them, and that's usually injury-related or just not getting on the field that often. But Eric Stokes, who first-round pick, cornerback, has not been able to contribute, and that is primarily related to injury. He's a guy who is known for his speed. I personally feel like at some point that injury is going to cut into the speed. You're not going to be able to expect that again when he is fully healthy. Sometimes I'm sure there's an argument that you can't hold somebody's health against them completely, but that's turning into a major disappointment. And then there's Anders Carlson, who I'm actually kind of surprised you went all the way to F, but he probably had more negative impact than any other player on this Packers team over the course of the season. And I mean, 12 straight games with a missed kick of any kind is kind of breathtaking. I guess I wonder if you think either one of those guys are salvageable. We know they have committed to Anders Carlson, at least publicly, and yes, it'll be a competition, but he's only a rookie. There's still time. Eric Stokes, obviously the talent is there. You don't want to just give up on a first-round draft pick, but the injuries are what they are, and at some point they got to get different guys in there to be sure that they have, you know, options besides him. And even when he's in there, we're not seeing necessarily that first-round talent. Are these two guys going to be here going forward? How do you feel about where they stand?
Yes, they are both salvageable. I don't know if I expect it. It would take a lot for both, but it's not. You can't say it's impossible. But before I get into that, a little bit about my process. Eric Stokes was one of the more difficult players for me to grade. And what I do every once, you know, it's funny that you open by saying that, you know, the combine is the unofficial start of the offseason, because this Monday, February 26th is the official start of my offseason. I've been on this grade since they lost to San Francisco. The first thing I do is I grade every single play, all 19 games, which is a few more than I expected this season, but all 19 games. And then once all the notes are compiled and it all goes in a, and you're going to laugh at me. Technology is not my friend. My girlfriend tells me all the time, you need to use an Excel spreadsheet. I'm like, hey, that sounds like a challenge. I don't know.
Colleagues tell you that too sometimes, Ryan.
Yeah. You know, all the notes, I have a system, all the notes line by line go into a Word doc. This year the Word doc ended up being, after special teams, I think 45 pages of Word doc.
Wow. That's intense.
And then I go through all the notes and, you know, on each player. That process of just making the grades, that's a full day. That's one day devoted to making the grades. And then I start writing. And so with Eric Stokes, I'm with you. What was tough is, traditionally, I don't hold injuries against a player, because, and I get that, you know, fans all the time are like, gosh, this guy's a bust. He can't stay healthy. Injuries are part of this game. Mm-hmm. It was Jared Cook almost a decade ago, the first person that told me, football's 100% injury rate. If you play this game, and I'll add, if you're not Julius Peppers or Preston Smith, apparently, but if you play this game, you will get injured. You will miss games. This is part of what you sign up for. And since Jared Cook, I've heard this countless times from countless players, because it's true. Football is 100% injury rate. So I traditionally don't take injuries into the grade equation. With Eric Stokes, it's been such a problem with injuries. But what really put him to F is in the two games he actually did play, he allowed 3 touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. So he made an impact. I couldn't just say it was just injury. I mean, he got back just enough. And when he played, he looked like a guy, understandably, who hadn't played football in a year, because he hasn't played football in a year. And that's the biggest issue that Eric Stokes is going to have. It's not just a matter of staying healthy at this point, which is enough in its own right, because he hasn't. But then there's so much time that he hasn't played the game. He's been rehabbing. He's been trying to just get his body right. For a young player who's really only had one full season in this league, that is a monumental uphill challenge. And I think everyone hopes that he makes it, because no one wants to see a player have injuries derail their career. That's not what anyone hopes for. But that's just the reality of the situation for him, is that he's staring at the base of a mountain. He's got to climb it. It's not going to be an easy process for him. So the impact that he did make when he was on the field, the 3 touchdowns allowed in 2 games, that just, for me, you had to give him a grade, and how do you give him anything but an F with all things considered? Anders Carlson's very simple, and I intentionally held off giving him a grade in my mind until I checked where is he. No kicker in the league not only missed as many kicks as him, 13, and it would have been 14 kicks that he missed if he didn't get a second chance at the end of the first half at week 8 against Minnesota. He has a 30-yard kick hit the right upright, and then it's an offsides on the Vikings. He gets a second chance, and he's able to make – it's 35-yard on the first attempt and 30 on the second. He's able to make that on the second chance. But so it would have been 14 if not for that. But no kicker was even close. Chad Ryland in New England is the only other kicker that missed double-digit kick attempts this season. Anders Carlson missed the most extra points in the league, missed the most kicks in the league. If your one job predominantly, you know, other than kickoff specialist, all right, so that's – it's not nothing. But let's say 90 to 95% of your job is to make kicks, and you miss the most in the league by far. That is a failure. That is enough.
Yeah, totally makes sense to me. And, of course, he'll be remembered for the one that he missed in San Francisco. So it's not like it didn't bite them in a big spot. It did. And
there were three games this season where the margin of loss, Denver, New York, and then San Francisco, were within the margin of a
miss kick.
Anders Carlson miss. That's three losses right there. It's not – we're not saying that they lost the game because of the miss. Even in San Francisco, make a stop. Right. I mean, there's other elements here. But on paper, you lost the game within the margin of a missed kick that should be made because that's your job. It's okay to say it was a major contributing factor because it was. It wasn't the only thing, but it was a major contributor.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are excited or interested in the safety position. This is the, at least on paper, seems like the weakest spot on the Packers going into the offseason. They did not, I think, kind of famously put a ton of resources into the safety position to begin with coming into this season, kind of raising the question, you know, I mean, some of that is just because of salary. They've got to prioritize something. But it also raises the question, do they feel like that area needs top addressing? And I don't know if the switch to a 4-3 defense changes how they might approach safety or the new coordinator changes how they might approach that position. This draft is not loaded at safety. There are a couple options. You know, Cooper DeJean of Iowa is one that's going to pop to the top of a lot of lists. He could also be a cornerback, but there's not a lot of depth there. So that would lead maybe someone to think the free agency market is the place to get a safety. But that, again, comes back to, do they prioritize it? So on your safety, your grades, the good news, you know, you said good news and bad news. The good news is they have assets with which to work with here where they can change who they have. They need a makeover, and they're gonna get one. I mean, they have no bodies at this point. So what are you thinking about the safety position? Do you think the Packers will emphasize that either in the draft or free agency, or maybe neither? I don't know.
Well, first of all, every single position, even special teams, every single position was pretty easy to find something good with.
Yeah.
You know, it was easy to find something bad with, too. I mean, you know, there's, when you talk about a position group as a whole, there's a lot of facets here to look at. So every single position was easy to find something good about, except safety. I mean, I sat down to write the safety. I'm like, what's good here? Yeah. You know, and let's start with Darnell Savage. And as I wrote, it's easy to look at Darnell Savage's missed tackles, his inability to track the deep ball, which is what a safety does, and say, oh, gosh, what a bust, this guy. You know, and he had a miserable divisional round game in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to go back to the plan. The plan's never made sense with Darnell Savage. They drafted him on his college film, right? And they saw the athletic numbers that he and he's the best athlete, even better than Jaire Alexander. He's the best athlete in the Packers secondary. You saw that at the end of the first half of the wild card game in Dallas. He gets in the open field, he's gone. I mean, he is the best athlete in the secondary. So they want to move him to the back end of their defense, and they think, okay, with this athleticism, he can track everything, he can get to every play. It's the perfect fit. There's one problem with that. He was never a full-time safety in college at Maryland. He played predominantly in the slot. And so they move him to safety, and sometimes position changes work in the NFL. I look at Lucas Van Ness, who played a lot of interior defensive line at Iowa. He's standing up as a rookie, as an outside linebacker. He makes that transition quite well. Lucas Van Ness had a very, very fine rookie season, and there's a bright future there. But it doesn't always work out well. And when you see Darnell Savage's missed tackles, his inability to track the deep ball, which is the job requirement of safety, you see that he can't do that, and you just let him stay there. I mean, how many times does Darnell Savage have to tell you, put me in the slot with his play, before you actually fully commit to training it? I'm not just talking midseason 2022 when he had a few games in the slot I thought he played a little bit better when he moved there, but that's a mid-season change. I'm talking about off-season. Okay, you're a slot guy. You are the guy that's going to be in the slot. Your athleticism near the line of scrimmage. How many times you got to tell you with this play to do that before you do that? And they never did that because they never gave themselves a choice. They've drafted three safeties since Darnell Savage. They've all been in the seventh round. So they've just been content to keep him back there when his play's saying that that's not what he does best, and now he's going into free agency, and it sure seems like the Packers are going to let Darnell Savage test the market. I would say it's premature to say he won't be back, but I don't know that they're going to match what the market is for him, because there's going to be teams out there that look at Darnell Savage and say, yeah, you didn't play well at safety, but you're not a safety. Let's move you to the slot. Let's see what happens. You know, it's. I'm not saying that he's going to be Micah Hyde going to Buffalo, but it's not all that different from the Packers standpoint. The Packers kept Micah Hyde as a nickel. He was a safety. He goes to Buffalo. He's a Pro Bowl safety and a mainstay in their defense. I'm not saying that Darnell Savage is going to be that. I don't know what he is in the slot because I didn't get to see enough of him in the slot. But it's not the first time they've kind of mismanaged a defensive back. And this was a mismanagement. So what do they do now? What's ironic about this whole thing is slot corner, nickel corner, is a primary need that they're going to have. I don't know if Keyshawn Nixon's going to be back or not. I would bring him back. I'd bring him back as a return specialist because he's as dynamic of a return specialist as there is in the league. And it's a position that for over a decade you haven't been able to consistently fill. So you've got one. Bring him back. Let him do that. But they need a slot. Far too many missed tackles from Keyshawn Nixon. Too many times, especially in big moments, Brandon Ayuk in the game-winning drive, the third down, in San Francisco, the end of the Giants game against Wandale Robinson. Way too many times that Keyshawn Nixon got beat in the slot. They need a slot corner. Well, Darnell Savage very well might be that, but they don't know. So, yeah, what do they do with safety? They have to rebuild. It's got to be a complete makeover. That's the one position it really makes sense to use some free agent dollars. They've got, you know, I've heard talk this offseason about, well, let's sign a free agent receiver. Why? I'm not saying that if there's a guy you really like, you don't do it. But why prioritize that? You for safety. You spend some free agent dollars, get your guy, and then they're going to have to draft high in the first, second round. It's got to be a high round draft pick as well. You have to put all your assets, dispose them all at safety. Because it can't be a repeat of last year.
We asked for a couple questions on this before we started this podcast, and one of them that we got was from reader Van Kaiser Soze on Twitter or X. Yeah, and he asked about the safeties. He said the need at safety is glaring, but how many guys are on the market that would be an upgrade over Savage? Seems like maybe only 3 to 4 good fits. That would be at $6 million at least, more likely $8 to $10 million. Can they bring Savage back at $5 million or less if they don't get one of the top free agents? And I guess you're saying sure, but not as a safety if they want to maximize this roster.
Absolutely not as a safety. Moving to slot corner. Mm-hmm. If it's $5 million, absolutely I'm doing that. Yeah, I'm bringing Darnell Savage back at $5 million. I'm giving him a go at slot corner because he is a tremendous athlete. There is high potential there that we have not seen with his athleticism. He was drafted in the first round for a reason. We just haven't seen him there. My guess is that his market will be higher than $5 million, especially with the inflated cap now. Yeah. So I don't know that they match his market, but if his market's only $5 million, then yeah, I bring him back and I actually commit to playing him at nickel in the slot and see what that athleticism can do closer to the line of scrimmage.
This is a question I'll probably ask our colleague Tom Silverstein during draft week, but you mentioned that inflated cap. It's going to be fascinating to see how teams use it. Are some teams going to throw more money at free agency? Are some teams going to just be more meticulous in their own record, in their own books, you know, like not kick as many contracts down the road? Or are they going to, you know, re-up some of these guys? Suddenly David Bakhtiari coming back doesn't seem like such a crazy stretch anymore, knowing that there's a lot more money available. What have you given that some thought? Do you have some idea what you think the Packers will end up doing with that extra cash?
First of all, it's a great thing for the players because you're going to get guys that, you know, there's more money to go around for the top players, but also for, you know, your C players, right? Your guys who are average, they're going to get more too. So the market goes up in that way. Everything when it comes to spending dollars starts with safety for me. Do they release David Bakhtiari? I can't say definitively without knowing his medicals, and they do, right? No. So I'm not in the – none of us are in the inside on that. If they – if the medicals – you know, and David Bakhtiari, last time he spoke early last season, was convinced and but we've heard this before, but he was convinced that this final surgery – they finally identified the issue and it won't be a problem again. The hard part was identifying what to fix with this injury. And that's why it took so long. And now they feel like they have, and it's fixed. And if that's true, if that's concrete, then maybe there's a chance he comes back. I'm not on the inside. We're on the outside. And when you look at what he's played 13 games the last 3 years, and not only that, but this is a young offense. Outside Aaron Jones, this is a very, very young offense. It's a youth movement. One of the big things that happened last year, obviously, is that all these rookies and second-year guys grew together. They ascended together. And I don't know how a 32-year-old left tackle fits that. So yeah. Between the uncertainty of his injury situation, the fact that you trimmed $21 million off the cap by releasing him, a left tackle, a franchise left tackle in the first round, second round, that fits the youth movement more than an aging veteran that can't stay on the field. So I would still be very surprised if David Bakhtiari was back. But, you know, if they didn't release him and they were convinced the medical was pristine now and everything's good moving forward, okay. I'm not going to criticize it. It's just the proof will be in the pudding in 2024.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Unlike safety, it is a strong class for offensive linemen, offensive tackles in particular. And then there's going to be one available at 25 if they want to go that route. Rashid Walker, I think, acquitted himself pretty well, given all things considered. I mean, he's not a surefire left tackle for the next 5 years necessarily, but it's not like they don't have options there. So I think that also plays into it a little bit.
Well, Jordan, you know, you mentioned Zach Tom. I feel like I'm the only one beating this drum, and that's fine. And let me just say, Zach Tom is a good right tackle. When you have a good right tackle, that's become a premium position with defenses having bookend edge rushers. It's no more like you just need a really good left tackle and just make do with the right tackle. You need a good right tackle in this league. He is a good right tackle, and they're hard to find. So I fully understand if the Packers just keep him at right tackle. But I'm still convinced – there could be more there if you move him inside to the interior, either guard or center. If you move him inside, there could be he could be an elite interior lineman. Rashid Walker can play right tackle. I think he could be a good right tackle. And then if you wanted to draft a franchise left tackle high, you know, this Packers offensive line was just fine. Look at the offensive production. Look at Jordan Love's ascension in the midseason. The offensive line had a part of that. It was just fine. But I don't know if it's elite. And if you if you can move the pieces in such a way to get an elite offensive line, I feel like that's got to be awfully tempting too. So yeah. I'm not I don't know. I'd say I'm expecting them to move Zach Tom off right tackle because he's a good right tackle. But I just, you know, could there be another gear, another level if they did that? I wonder if it could.
Yeah. All right, Jordan Love, haven't said his name 33 minutes into a podcast, looking back at the Packers season when he is, in fact, the headliner of the whole thing. I think it's because your grade just seems so obvious. You gave him a B, which, again, we consider to be a pretty good rating. I think that's correct. I mean, he isn't a top five quarterback in the league yet, and the first half of the season was bumpy like we all thought it would be. The thing is, he turned himself around dramatically, became an excellent quarterback in the second half of the season, had an otherworldly showing in Dallas, and now everyone is pretty comfortable that he's the franchise quarterback going forward. That's a pretty good season. That was what we were all coming into the season. We were saying that's the one thing the Packers they need to get that situated, settle down. If he's a great quarterback, who cares what the win-loss record is? And they got their quarterback, and they got to eat their cake too because they went pretty reasonably deep into the NFC playoffs. What did you see from Jordan Love this year, and did you think about giving him a B plus or even into the A category because he was so against expectations, or maybe even the other way because the first half of the season was you know what it was? He could have maybe gotten away with a B minus. How did you feel about his season?
You know, I talked about how Eric Stokes is one of the tougher players to grade. Jordan Love was on the opposite end of that spectrum.
Yeah, I bet.
It was such an easy B. First of all, and this is important, you might think, and for good reason, you might think, well, gosh, he was playing as one of the best quarterbacks in the league by the end of the season. How is it not higher? Because October counts too. Like, when you grade the totality of a season, you have to grade the totality of a season. And he, in October, he might have been at a D level, right? I mean, you go back to October and forget everything that happens after. None of us knew that he was going to be the guy. That was very much an open question. And I'm not sure you could say he was even playing at an average level at that point. And much of that was because the pieces around him were not playing at an average level either. But Jordan Love contributed to that in October. And what made his rise, his sudden rise, so remarkable was that it came from there, right? It came from a clear low. And then the last 2 months of the season, which is a good sample size. He was an A-level quarterback the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. If you're just grading that, Jordan Love was an A. And that's saying something because, again, I don't hand out A's freely. You got to be cream of the crop. He was cream of the crop down the stretch. He was as good as anyone in the league, short of Patrick Mahomes, who you have to invent a new letter for Patrick Mahomes, maybe G for GOAT. I mean, that's what Patrick Mahomes is. But, yeah, if you're as good as anyone short of Patrick Mahomes, you're an A, and that's where he was. So, for me, it was, you know, the October pulled his grade down to B. It wasn't going to be lower than that because it was a month, 6 weeks of the season. The smaller sample size, he played at that level. But the most important in larger sample size, he was cream of the crop. I think that Jordan Love's entering in the 2024 as potentially the NFC's best quarterback. Mm-hmm. You look at the landscape from a talent standpoint, really only Jalen Hurts can match. And if you look at those two, you want to talk about two quarterbacks heading in different directions down the stretch last season. Jalen Hurts has been to the Super Bowl. We know the talent is there. But boy, the Philadelphia implode. And Jalen Hurts had a lot to do with that. Yeah. Whereas the Packers went the opposite direction, straight north. And Jordan Love had a lot to do with that. So I think that, you know, Brock Purdy is a fine quarterback. I think he's better, I think, than the general consensus. Brock Purdy processes so well. And that's probably the most important job from a quarterback perspective. I saw him on the same field. You saw him on the same field, JR.
Yeah.
Brock Purdy doesn't have Jordan Love talent. Mm-hmm. The Jordan Love was a first-round pick for a reason. And Brock Purdy processes very well. He's a damn good quarterback. He was Mr. Irrelevant for a reason. From a talent standpoint, Jordan Love has more. So you look around the conference, I think it's very possible, if not likely, that Jordan Love's going to be the best quarterback in the NFC this next season.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what Dak Prescott does in the what could be the twilight of Mike McCarthy in Dallas, or probably will be the twilight of Mike McCarthy in Dallas. He obviously didn't stack up head-to-head on that one particular day, but he's got some track record there too. I want to
how do you put Dak Prescott ahead of Jordan Love when you saw him on the same field?
Yeah,
I get that it was just one game and that Dak Prescott led the NFL in touchdowns last season. And that he's not over the hill yet. There's still good football over the course of the season left in there. But it's a very simple question. If you had to pick one quarterback to go win a playoff game with right now, who are you picking? And it's obviously Jordan Love.
I think you're right. Before we get closer to the end here, I do want to ask about running back because I think there's a pretty good mystery about how the Packers handle this offseason with running back. Is Aaron Jones back? We think so. What happens with A.J. Dillon? Do they draft a running back? Do they even go in the first round and draft a running back? I know there's definitely going to be people who feel like that is a bad idea as a concept, but they might have the opportunity to do that with the 25th pick. A.J. Dillon, it strikes me, is probably one of the tougher guys you had to grade. There were moments this season where I thought he really wasn't contributing at all, that he was a net negative. And then there were a couple games, especially when Aaron Jones was out, that I thought A.J. Dillon played pretty dang good. And I think the grade sort of reflects that. He's a C. He's an average guy in the aggregate. Although there were, I don't know if there were many average days. It was like there were days he was bad and days he was good. He's an interesting player. And I don't know if he's going to be a Packer going forward. So give me your thoughts on the running back room and how you graded these guys.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. A.J. Dillon was actually pretty easy for me as well.
Okay.
he's an average NFL running back. What mm-hmm. AJ Dillon is, the thing that he does well, he will push a pile. You watch his film, he finishes runs, and he will push a pile. There's just not any dynamic playmaking there. I mean, he had a couple check down passes that he stretched into bigger gains, but short of that, he's not breaking tackles. He's not bursting into the second level. He's not doing those things, but he's not a bad running back either. He's absolutely not bad. He's not a D. He runs hard. He finishes runs. He will push a pile, and that's not bad to have in short yardage situations. I mean, he can do those things. But when you look at how that translates to 2024, Aaron Jones is going to be back, and he absolutely should be back because he hasn't lost a step. But he got banged up quite a bit in 2023. You know, going into 2024, that you have to keep Aaron Jones fresh and healthy. That was why he had the best stretch of his career down the stretch in 2023, is because he was fresh and finally healthy. You have to keep him fresh and healthy. That doesn't mean workload status. You have to manage Aaron Jones so that you can get the best out of him. Because when you get the best out of him, there's a lot of good there. To me, that says running back too. You know, you want a workhorse that can at least adequately share the workload with Aaron Jones and not have a big drop off. And there was a big drop off between Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon last season. So if they go out and draft a running back in the first round, and I know it's not supposed to be a running back class littered with, you know, first round picks, but if they love a guy in the first round and they've got to have him at 25, I don't think that's a bad pick. That does so much, not just for your offense, but and Brian Gutekunst said this in the season wrapper. When he was fresh and healthy, Aaron Jones was great. The key is keeping him fresh and healthy. So it does a lot for Aaron Jones as well to be able to do that. And you have a true dynamic backfield with you know, kind of a two-headed monster. They think they can get that in the first round. I think it's worthwhile. If they wait, then that's a fine, you know, depending on their board, that's a fine strategy too. But they need to draft a running back that can complement Aaron Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm someone who loves my Wisconsin crossover connections. So a couple of names to keep in mind as the combine gets rolling. J.C. Latham, first round left tackle out of Alabama. He started his high school career in Waukesha at Catholic Memorial before transferring to a school in Florida. He could be available at 25, maybe gets taken earlier, but that's a possibility. And then running back, you know, like let's say they take one in the third round, there's Braylon Allen out of Fond du Lac High School in the University of Wisconsin. He is going to be at the combine this week, and that's a name maybe Packers fans are chomping at the bit because they love Wisconsin crossovers as much as I do. Just in general, if there was anything you really learned about doing this whole process as you were looking at each position group, if something really struck you that maybe you weren't expecting or something that just became ever more crystal clear as you were sort of breaking things down that we haven't already discussed, what would it be? What jumps to mind for you?
You know, that's hard because that's what I enjoy so much about this grade series. And it is absolutely grueling. But I learned so much about every position. And that's not just lip service. You know, I don't get to watch that much film during the season because I'm working on other things. This past season, I watched every throw that Jordan Love had for all, you know, 17 games in the regular season, then wrote a kind of an extended story on that. And that was my film watch. So as soon as the season ends, I sit down and I watch every play. I grade every play, study every play, often watch plays multiple times just to see every facet of every play. Yeah, there's so much that you learn. I'll go back. TJ Slayton might have been the most underrated player on this roster. I don't know that I enjoyed watching anyone's film as much as I enjoyed watching TJ Slayton's film, because you talk about just a absolute beast in the middle. That's what he was last season. And he's developed quite a bit. He always had good strength, but his run defense is top notch. The pass rush, you know, he had close to 10 pressures, which for a nose tackle, like, look, he's not going to be Kenny Clark. That's not what he is. But he had more burst than I've seen in prior years getting after the quarterback. Had a sack. He didn't have any sacks on season, but had a sack wiped out because of Jonathan Owens' holding penalty. So there was more pass rush there too. And the defensive line as a whole, you know, I've heard this offseason, oh, they need to add to the defensive line. No, they don't. No, that defensive line is the one place on this defense that is 100% ready to go.
Even though Kingsley and Ibarra is hurt, though.
He's not defensive line.
Okay, I see what you mean. I was taking the whole line, all the way across. But anyway.
No, I'm talking interior defensive line. You know, in this 2023 version of the Packers, the defensive line are those guys on the interior, the outside linebackers, the edge guys. Yeah, sure. You're right. Kingsley and Ibarra's injury is very significant because – one of the things that the Packers had last season that they haven't had since 2015 was four outside linebackers play at least 400 snaps. Mm-hmm. And every good defense, especially a 3-4, will tell you, you want to have a four-man rotation outside linebacker. You want to have your two starters and then two guys off the sideline as backups that can rotate in and be productive. And they had that with Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, Lucas Van Ness, and Kingsley and Ibarra. They had four productive guys, including two backups. Well, now it's down to three, and we don't know when Kingsley and Ibarra is going to be back. So that's significant. It hasn't been since 2015 when they had Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Mike Neal, and Nick Perry all over 400 snaps. Not since then, almost a decade that they haven't had that four-man rotation. Now they're down to three again. But the defensive line really stood out to me as I don't know that we realized just how good that defensive line was. And part of that, too, was two rookies, and Colby Wood and Carl Brooks, who were different players. Colby Wooden, you know, Carl Brooks showed some really, really nice pass rush. I think he had four sacks on the season. His pressures were in the double digits. He's got a bright future as a pass rusher. Colby Wooden, not the same pass rush, played the run really well. Both of those guys, I gave a C-plus for Carl Brooks and a C for Colby Wooden. When that's your fourth and fifth, that's really good. Devontae Wyatt took a step. There's another step for him to take. He's got to finish plays more often. But he absolutely took a step as far as getting after the quarterback. His pressures were, I think, around 20. He was better than rookie season, and he does that again. You're talking about a real stud there. Lot to like on that defensive line. A lot of questions everywhere else on defense, but a lot to like with the defensive line.
He is Ryan Wood. You can read everything he has at PackersNews.com. Like he said, his offseason begins now, so he's probably pretty relieved, and he'll still be checking in. We'll have the owners' meetings coming up a little bit later this offseason. Obviously, the draft is just pretty much right around the corner, so you can find everything he has there. And Ryan, thank you for checking in. Thanks for the grade series. It was awesome stuff, and we'll be chatting with you again very soon.
All right, take care. I'm going to go hibernate now. Enjoy Indy.
Yes, I'm going to Indy. So yes, thanks again to Ryan. Thanks to you for listening to the Green 19 podcast. We will be back with you again later this week from the Combine, me and Tom Silverstein. And until then, talk to you soon. Bye-bye, everybody.